What up, what up? We're back. Post show episode 137. Man, we had a blast today. As you'll probably see in the show notes, we talk some anime, but a lot of live action stuff and a lot of really cool movies. The Oscar race is like fully on, and I think we both want to watch most of the films this year. So it's been really exciting watching a lot of stuff. We start off with Severance after a 3 year delay between seasons one and two. We spoilers for season two, episode one, obviously, and then we even get into a little bit of theorizing, which is fun. White Lotus season two, I give like a very quick review on that. Sakamoto Days, that's a new anime that's airing on Netflix. That's a couple episodes in. We talk about that. Solo Leveling season two, saving the weekends of everyone who watches it. And then three Oscar flicks this week: A Different Man, Emilia Perez, and A Real Pain. And we have thoughts on all of them. Enjoy the show.
Oh, hey there, Grant.
Hey, dude.
How you doing there, fella?
Good.
Good.
This is take two.
Take two.
We gotta break the ice. It's take two. We only got a minute into the last one,
Yeah.
and then there was a fire alarm. But yeah, we're back, and we agreed in our first take. We have to start this with Severance. Season two, episode one. It just aired. When did it air? What day?
Friday, but I'm treating this like a Sunday night show.
Yeah. It feels like a good Sunday night show. I think one thing that I missed the most about it was how absurd, and I'm not going deep on this, but how insane like the subreddit is for Severance.
It's so funny. There was one point because when we had finished watching it Sunday night, it was like, it's just like a natural, you're just on the subreddit all of a sudden. And I was like, oh my God, I gotta send this to Dave. I'm like, oh shit, like I actually don't know if he's seen it yet. So like, and then I sent it to Leanna. I think Leanna was like in one thread for probably about 45 minutes. She was just like so sucked in. It was a really, there's some really, really good minds out there.
Bro, some of the theories are so good, they make me worry that they've figured out the show. Like, some of them are so good. Now, granted, like, this is also a show, at least, so, like, my, you know, it's early, but it does seem like they are intentionally leaving a lot of breadcrumbs, right? And the nature of the show, like, in tech, God, like, there's so many parallels, but in tech, there's, like, a term called white box and black box, and you can see through the white box, and you can't see through the black box, as in it's, like, a closed system, right? The user has no understanding of what's happening on the inside. And that is the show, kind of, right? Like, the severed people don't really know what they're doing. That's why they're trying to piece together information. So, like, just by a result of how the show is structured, like, one, the characters are also going to be theorizing about what's happening, and then it invites the entire audience to be like, what do you think they're doing in there?
It's so funny. Like, it's just one of those shows that, like, the second something happens on screen, like, I'm turning to Leanne and it's like, that's, like, spoiler, like, is that the innie or the outie version of, who are, like, like, it just, it's so funny how it's kind of cultivated this, like, this fan, just involvement and engagement, like,
Big
from the
time.
second a scene airs. You're like, you're, and it's, I, not a gripe, but I did find this episode like very fast. I don't know if it was just like the super fast pacing of the opening, which was really cool.
So cool. Beautiful camera work.
Beautiful camera work, but I genuinely felt like it was off, like so strong. And as the episode tried to slow down, I kind of felt like I was still hyped up from like that really big opening.
Right. Yeah.
And I kind of felt like not like an unease or whatever. It was kind of felt like, oh, like I'm still kind of like reeling from that. It was just
Yeah.
kind of, it was like almost like a dead halt inertia thing. And then you're back to like trying to piece everything together versus trying to keep up with what's going on in the scene. So
It was a
it's
jarring experience.
really cool though.
But in a way, it's kind of jarring. I think that sequence, the running sequence, and then the drama that follows, is like they did a really good job in that episode, and let's say the first half of that episode, showing how jarring and confusing like Mark's innie's consciousness is. Because like they did a really good job focusing on like, see you later, and then he just teleports back the elevator, what's that camera technique with the aperture change of the
Oh,
shot,
sure.
like that whole thing, really 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 cool how they did that. And also, to be it's tricky because I want to say, oh well, they had to keep the same energy from that insane cliffhanger, even though it was 3 years ago.
It's crazy to think that it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, but It makes sense, right? Like I actually like that they did it that way, where his consciousness just, because presumably Dylan lets go of the button. We still haven't seen what happened to Audi Mark,
True.
right? Or we haven't seen actually anything on the outside as a result of what happened in the finale of season one. But like, we're now in the game, and I was saying this to Sam while we were watching it. Because they refuse to show you anything on the outside and any of the characters' Audis, as far as we know.
Finale wise, you mean? Like we saw some stuff on the outside in the first season.
No. I mean, in the pilot of season two. Sorry,
Oh,
in his
gotcha.
first episode, we haven't seen any of the characters' outies, as far as we know, right? So, like, one of the first questions I think people have, and that I have, is like, Milchek tells Mark, "Oh, it's been 5 months," and the problem is,
We
has
don't know.
it?
We can't, yeah.
He Milchek is the only one disseminating that information currently, and we have no way of determining whether or not he's telling the truth. Is this just like another measure of control? It has it been a week? Like it could have been any amount of time. I mean, without it being, crazy and like the characters like noticeably aging or something.
If I had to guess, it was like 5 days of like them trying to get their shit, like, Lumos trying to get their stuff together, like leaning into like for like, kind of reintegrating everyone or whatever. But we'll know, I'm sure, at some point. But
At first, I thought they were really trying to throw them off with the whole, like, oh, you guys went kind of viral and you were like whistleblowers. And I was like, really? But then it's easy to forget. The Heliar thing, that was a very, very public event. Ironically, like, Mark would have accomplished nothing in terms of, I mean, other than telling his family, and we don't know what kind of repercussions there were there. Bert and Irving.
Irving,
We just went straight for Bird, so he probably didn't accomplish anything. But and then they said they removed all the recording equipment from the office. I don't know if you buy that.
There was a couple really, a no, I don't believe that, but they did like a couple really one of the things that stuck out to me is when like Milchick kind of takes Dylan into that back office and like it just revealed that like, oh, like there's just more layers and rooms upon rooms, and I was like, oh, that's like a very like, let me show you a secret to kind of lure you in kind of thing. Like when, again, like they're still like, like the,
It's like
a
pulling a
thousand foot
kid into the
wall.
back room and being like, I'm going to tell you something the other kids don't know, but only if you keep it a secret.
Yeah,
It's
so
a
it's
manipulation tactic.
there's also like I'm blanking on the exact moment, but I remember Leanne just being like, oh, like what do you think of that? I'm like, that smells like red herring. Like there were so many moments of like, I think just trying to not trick the fans, but just like keep us discombobulated. Like it's just, I think like the show's intention is to keep us off our feet, to constantly be, chasing after it. But yeah, it's
I
like
missed it. I missed it a lot. I missed the soundtrack
I'm trying, yeah,
performances.
the soundtrack is good. I'm just trying to think of like a show that like I get so like I have so much fun with, like in a very serious show, like the like a mystery. Like I'm trying to think. I remember Leanne and I watched The Outsider on HBO a few years ago. It was a Stephen King adaptation. We really dug that. Like a good like, pseudo like, that was like a murder mystery kind of thing. And this isn't quite fully that, but just like a good mystery, right? Like it feels like I missed out on Lost, and I feel like I'm getting my chance to have a show like Lost,
Yeah, hopefully they
Moments, like
stick the
fan
landing
engagement.
better than Lost
You know what I
did.
mean? Yeah,
But
yeah,
yes.
yeah. But no, I
Actually,
loved it.
you're right though, because the spirit is quite similar, right? Lost was about landing on an island and having no information, and everything around you is weird and doesn't add up. And yeah, this is definitely similar to that. You make a good point. Can we go to just a touch, just a little bit of theory crafting, just a
Yeah,
touch?
absolutely.
I think the theory that has the most smoke, and there's a lot of theories, and I'm not going to go super deep on this. I'm going to stick to what I've actually seen in the show. And not go down the like if this then that,
Oh,
you know what I
sure.
mean? Because there's a lot, and that subreddit is awesome. If you're like a big fan of Severance, I recommend you check it out. But the one that I saw back in season one, and that actually like rang somewhat true for me, and you could argue maybe is it like too obvious? I don't know. But there is one point where they're talking about Kier, like the Kier Egan, the OG, their Jesus, and he said I have the quote here. In my life, I have identified four components, which I call tempers, from which are derived every human soul. And they are woe, frolic, dread, and malice. And the idea, one of the central questions of the show is what is the macro data team actually refining? What do the numbers on the screen mean? Right?
Sure.
There's lots of like fun theories. A lot of them, and I think a lot of them central on creating life.
Sure.
And you know, I think most notably, like they have buckets in them that have the first two letters of the four tempers I just mentioned, right? There's a WO, an FR, a
Okay,
DR,
I
and an
never caught
MA.
that.
So these are like the bucket. So I think the easy theory, when you look at, you keep that quote in mind and you look at that, and who knows, is that like they're doing something. They're identifying, maybe they're decrypting data that builds these four tempers in a way that will allow them to create souls or remap souls or something. Something involving life. Maybe
Sure.
like life doesn't equal soul and soul doesn't equal life in this instance. I don't really know, quite know. But I also have a theory that like, and again, I don't know if this is original or not, but like I think there's something to it that one, if let's like even though they're severed, they still don't know what they're working on, right?
Yeah.
So like, is the severing procedure like a security thing? My initial thought, my knee-jerk reaction was like, oh, keep them severed so they can't talk about it. But as it turns out, even if they could talk about it, they don't even know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, just like an extra layer though.
So I think it maybe, but maybe the first layer is like, maybe it's something only like a blank slate can do. Like maybe if the outie sat in front of that screen, maybe they wouldn't be able to decrypt that data the way a like blank consciousness can.
Ooh, that's interesting. I like
Do you know what I
that.
mean?
Yeah.
In that, because they have no bias now. Like I was going through this, you know, I rewatched all the reactors, watched season one. And one thing that I kind of forgot about is, you know, his Mark's dipshit brother-in-law with the self-help book. And it's awful, right? But it got in on the inside and it fucking contaminated their consciousnesses. Because even though it's a bad book, it's new ideas that like lead to self-actualization, like very basic self-help
Sure.
principles, but they never, ever, ever would have ran into those ideas on the
It's
inside.
basically like the truth Bible. Like
Yes.
without it, yeah.
And their innies never would have been exposed to such dangerous thought processes. But they started reading that shit, and what happened? Like, in short order, they all were like, let's get the fuck out of here. Now, like, I'm not saying it
This
all
is the
comes
problem.
down to the book,
No, but
but
it's a
that
huge part,
was
right? It's a
definitely
huge part.
an accelerant. Anyway, so.
I do have to say, like, maybe it was intentional, but I found out of like all last season, because you and I kind of jumped in like probably like at the tail end, or we were halfway through when we kind of jumped on. I
What are
can't
you talking about?
remember.
Severance? Oh yeah,
Yeah.
you're right. We were not like
So
S1E1 people, I don't think.
I feel like I'm like we missed like that first wave of like like the subreddit engagement or like the fan engagement. But even like we did catch like every episode from like the midpoint on. But there was something about this episode that I found like there were so many obvious things that a lot of it, like there was this whole run with people like grabbed onto name tags and like what certain name tags said, and there was stuff about like other languages stuff, and I was like, is this probably like the most like obvious hints they've given in an episode so far? Which I think maybe it's like intentionally kind of like leading people, letting people run wild, or like trying to send them down the wrong path or whatever.
This
But
is the thing
yeah,
that
it's just fun. It's so fun to be like a fan of this show right now.
note makes me wonder, like that Kier Egan stuff, the four tempers, that is like the basis of my theory, and I'd come up with that on my own. Like I put together some pieces, but like it makes me wonder, like is that just a giant red herring? Like is that potentially co corporate propaganda, just bullshit they made up at Lumen?
And just like doubling down in it, like
Yeah,
the
like the.
constant imagery of seeing it, yeah.
Yeah, we know the Cure stuff is pretty culty, so it makes me think that it's not bullshit. But could those like acronyms, like the short form dialogue, like on their computers, be like just a thing to throw you off the trail? Like, also yes, and I'll fall on that sword if that's the case. But yeah, anything else really? Like, oh.
Oh, I do have
Go ahead.
I sorry. No, okay. I
I
have
wonder if
one
we have the
legitimate
same
gripe.
thing. Okay,
I was
okay.
so excited because it opens up with like stay tuned for a making of like a I thought they were like teeing up like,
hey, this is how we did this thing. I was like, oh, I bet you this is gonna be like a really cool shot or something. And then it opens up to the episode, you know, the like that really cool opener.
I didn't see this.
You know, the running sequence. Oh, really?
The BTS? I didn't know. No.
Well, there. Yeah,
I've heard like, them talk about it, but I haven't seen it yet.
No, like I hit play on the episode, and it was like a warning screen of like, stay tuned after the credits for a making or it specifically kind of referenced some, like the making of something. And I was like, oh, cool. They're going to like run something down. And there's that really cool opening shot. I was like, oh, I bet you they're going to show you how they did that.
Because that was beautiful.
It was. And then, you know, and I'll come back to that in a second. But like you finished the episode, we sat through the credits. And it was just the typical like the HBO, like let's spoil the whole fucking season.
No way.
And I was like, I'm watching it. And I'm like.
So it's a promo reel, but with a lot of like upcoming.
Yeah, and like scene, and it would focus on each cast member, and then it would show them like a scene of them in like the coming season, and I clocked into it after like I saw
a little too long.
John Turturro was on screen. And I was like, oh, that's for sure a scene we haven't seen yet. Yeah, I was like, right. I was like, we gotta turn this off right now. I was like, I thought they were gonna like say how they did that shot, but
yeah.
Did you see the article about the opening? It took them 5 months to
I make did,
the
opening yeah. scene because it's funny because it looks like a oneer, but obviously it's not.
No, yeah, they a little bit of CG. They used a treadmill, like really, yeah, like really, really cool stuff.
So that sounds very interesting, and I want to watch it.
Yeah,
but my knee jerk from hearing you say that is like, does that sound maybe a little over engineered? Isn't he just running down a hallway? Like, I mean, I guess you need the RoboCam for a lot of the cool like.
I thought maybe they used a drone. The way they did that thing, there was like, there was one shot in like a four, like a you know, like a cross.
Yeah.
Corridor.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I bet you they used a drone to do that. Like a circular shot on that. Like really tight corners. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't.
Yeah, but, I have a feeling the Tom Cruise running scenes, because they were saying that they looked a lot at Tom Cruise running for like his form, and I believe that. But I have a feeling they're not shot in multiple sequence across 5 months. Like you see a lot of the BTS from those mission movies.
Yeah.
That's just that motherfucker running down. Like he's just running, right?
Mm-hmm.
The power of Scientology, dude.
That's Egan.
That's he's got that real Egan blood. Yeah. Tom Cruise, dude. And one theory, by the way, that we haven't mentioned about Egan is like maybe if you decrypt enough data or something, maybe you can like map it to a soul, and maybe one of the end goals is bringing back the OG, like bringing back Kira Egan, and then and as a result discovering the whole Fountain of Youth, Eternal Life thing. I don't know. Shit, there was one other thing. Oh, Keanu Reeves.
Oh yeah, that
did
was
you cool. catch that?
The voiceover.
Yeah, that was great. It feels like Mark and Helly's romance lost a little bit of inertia as a result of finding out that he had a wife, because he mentioned that.
Or because he wasn't talking to the innie, and there wasn't that back and forth. There was a scene.
Okay. You're referring to the theory that is going around that Helly's Audi has infiltrated. Or that there never was an innie.
Potentially.
Okay. So this is a theory that I do see circling.
I think there was an innie for sure.
Yes.
In season one. Because like I'm split because I think that was the red herring moment we were talking about. Leanna and I kind of clocked of it was too obvious of a scene of like Helly lying about what she saw.
Yeah, because we haven't mentioned this on the pod yet, but they're recapping what their innie saw on the outside, and Helly very clearly lies, and it's tough because Mark says like his painful truth.
Yeah, he clocks in immediately too.
Yeah,
which
for sure.
So, yeah, I don't know. And then there's just like a couple of like moments after that of like him kind of communicating with her, and he was still kind of being his self.
Yeah,
in his you know kind of familiarity with her, and there just felt to be like a little bit of reservation on her part or like unknowing. So I don't know. It's
I didn't mean to interrupt you. The theory is that the Audi has infiltrated, and that's why she seems out of character. I will say the counter to that is the innie is probably having a major identity crisis, realizing that she belongs to the family that put them there.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that'd be a tough one. It's like, hey, what did you see on the outside? And it's like.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, my wife is missing, this and that, but also, and then your story is, oh, right, I belong to the family, I'm like royalty on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one, but I'm not convinced either way.
Yeah, I did love, it was heartbreaking, the scene of like Dylan trying to stop Irvin from going out the door.
That was
and just sad. Like, you know, begging him to like stay and all that. I was like, what? Like
the Irving plot line is potentially at times more emotional than like Mark's and Helly's circumstances. Like John Turturro is so amazing, and the scenes he had in late throughout season one, but in late season one with Christopher Walken, really, really touching stuff. And the painting stuff that the Audi is doing is so deeply sad. Like, that's a fuck of a storyline.
Yeah.
God, we should just do a Severance podcast. Man, I'm really looking forward to continuing to watch that. And then, like I was saying to Sam, like, we're going to get a double header here because about 1 month into Severance, White Lotus Season 3 starts.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I have to watch that one week to week. We finished Season 2. Can I give a quickie review on Season 2?
Absolutely, yeah.
I think I'll just say, I've got notes on it here. I think that's a rare, so White Lotus Season 2, I think it's a rare moment where you have a smash hit drama in Season 1 that is like, applauded critically everywhere. They win awards. They do a quick follow-up with Season 2 and it's better. Like, that's unbelievable. You know, you and I, we mentioned the True Detective story all the time, right? That guy had like 8 years to write the first season. HBO knocks on the door. They said, hey, great job, lightning in a bottle. We knocked it out of the park. You got 8 months, cough up Season 2. Does his best, gives his best shot, and it's and everyone's pissed off that it's not as good, right? I don't know how they kept the bar that high for Season 2. I don't understand how it's as good as it is, but it that's like a borderline 10 out of 10 show, dude.
It's so good. And I remember we had talked when you were just starting and you would ask like what my preferred season was, but like they're so same without like being so fresh and so different. And it's not just the setting, like they find a way to find all new subcategories of these people that are in Season 1, but like, you know, they're same but different. Like, it's just at no point did it feel like retreaded ground.
No, similar beats and setup, but completely different circumstance.
Yeah.
Characters have completely different arcs. They all have beginning, middle, and ends. I don't understand how you can make a show like that and every character is relatable. Like, every character is grounded. You understand why every character makes the decision that they make. Like, that's
stupid or not, you know, like you can see like their choice and their decision is the true to who they are as a character.
Dude, that was that blew my mind, and I was like, we finished that and I was like, that's what like high level drama should look like in like 2024. Like, this is what we should be doing. We shouldn't be, you know what I mean, dicking around. I don't know, but that was an unbelievable show. I think I could go on about every single character ending, but I won't. What I will say is the one that broke me was Aubrey Plaza's character Harper and Ethan. They're like happy ending to their storyline. Not being, I think at the end of the day that they're just going to be like that other couple that they despise is so fucked up and so sad.
Yeah.
And it broke my heart. I was like, they're going to make it work or they're not. You know what I mean? But I didn't want them to make it work like that. It's the definition of like a bittersweet ending in a lot of cases. And the same with the Lucia, the prostitute, her ending, that twist. They fooled me on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone is just like so good. Like there's no, genuinely, I don't think there's a weak link in the first or the second season. Like everyone is just like fully, like the role they're playing, they're just fully pitching. Yeah. Like it's
the performance are, you're right. The performances are unbelievable. Every character on that show could get nominated for a lead or a supporting. That shit was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay. That was White Lotus. Over to you, my friend. Start us off here.
Sakamoto Days. Check it out.
Yes. So there's just two episodes out, right?
Yeah, just the two. Yeah.
I had myself all confused because I was like, where the hell is this thing? It's being simulcast or no, it's not. Is it just Netflix?
It's just Netflix, yeah.
Yeah, so I was
but like, Japan does get, they like, they're always gonna be an episode ahead. Their first week they got two. Oh. So like whenever we got two, they got episode three. So there is like a lot of it doesn't really matter because Leanne and I have read it, but I was like, oh, like, you know, anyone who hasn't watched it, maybe like, keep in mind that, like, that's not the episode thread you're looking at. But
good point. Yes. I didn't know that.
But yeah, man, what'd you think?
So I've had to temper my expectations because, mm-hmm. like, I know this is a big one for Leanna. And I was like, okay, well, they better land the plane here, or they better take off at least successfully.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the short version is I really like it. I think it's mm-hmm. funny. Mm-hmm. I think it has heart. And it's like a weird... It's not exactly these two things, but it has elements of like Way of the House Husband and Spy Family meets like Mob Psycho almost. It's like got a bunch of like weird...
It did remind me of Mob Psycho a bit, yeah.
It has a bunch of weird pieces, yeah. I like the comedy a lot. I think the comedy is probably like the best part of it, maybe. I like the duo.
Surprisingly brutal, eh?
Yeah, I like that a lot, though. Yeah. It's like, I feel like we're seeing more stuff like that these days, where like anime like tone switches really mm-hmm. quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's like decapitations in the show.
Yeah, the second episode, there's a full on decapitation.
Right?
Yeah. And then the dude's like, oh, it's still breathing. You're right, it can still breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Kind of wild, but I liked that a lot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's early,
mm-hmm.
but I thought it was very strong. The animation quality is good, which is important.
It's okay,
not great, but it's good.
It's, you know, like, I think, you know, because we watched like Leanna's over the moon, dude. Like, she's so happy, and you know, like,
good.
She's happy with it, so I'm happy with it. Like, you know, I really like the manga. Like, I was super excited for this as well, but she is like hugely anticipating this, or was hugely anticipating this, and so when we watched that first episode, it was kind of like, you know, like looking over, like, hey, are you having fun? But she really liked it. So I think we watched them each three times. Like, we were at her parents' place the other day. She's like, why don't we just throw it on, like, let's watch episode two again. And Corinne's going watching it with us now. She really likes it. But I gotta say, I really like it. It's exactly what I pictured.
The
animation is good when it needs to be.
Yeah.
Like, when there's like a little bit of action, specifically in the second episode, like especially that last fight, they definitely dialed it up a little bit. It's mm-hmm. nothing crazy. It is a little disheartening to see, like, because this is like one of the like their biggest Shonen Jump's biggest shows or
series. Yeah, so that I knew is that as a property, it's quite large, right?
It is a little disheartening to see, like, all the love that was given to Dandadan and Chainsaw Man, Jujutsu Kaisen, and, like, you know, like, all these other flagship-esque series. And it's, again, I understand at the end of the day, it's who the production company picks. It's not Shonen Jump's job to do that.
Okay, I was going to say, when you say all the love, you're referring to specifically the production quality?
And yeah, production quality. Yeah. Like, you know, like, Dandadan is, like, one of the biggest standouts of last year.
It's gorgeous.
You could feel the love from Science
Chainsaw Man, you're right. Yeah, yeah, okay.
You know, and, like I know it's the Dr. Stone studio that's doing Sakamoto Days, so, like, it's, you know, and it feels like that, you know, like, very kind of at its paces, and it picks up when it needs to. And like I said, It is like the way the house is. When it is in the writing, it is in the comedy, it is in kind of like the slice of life relationships. But it's like, it wouldn't be nice, you know, like it was just like there was just like a little that much more. But otherwise, like, we're super happy with it.
Good.
It's getting a part two in the summer as well. So
what's this first run? 10, 12?
12. They're doing 12 and 12. But so that shows they're, you know, someone is behind it, they care about it. It's been doing really well. I've been seeing just about every other day, Netflix puts out those like numbers for the weeks and the ratings.
Yeah.
And I believe in the anime section, it's been number one pretty consecutively since it came out. So people are watching it. You know, it's one of those shows. It can be like the everyman's anime. You know, like, you don't have to be hyper locked into the scene to like see like, oh, like a cool assassin show, but, you know, like an overpower. And also another really cool thing too. And like, again, I've known this, but like, they do like overpowered really well, specifically with Sakamoto too. Like, no, like the series itself, Sakamoto Days.
Oh, but
like
the characters, yes.
They do like a really cool, like, the power balancing is really cool, like with Shin and Rin, and like the gag of like, you know, him getting killed in his mind.
In his mind, that gets a laugh out of me like most of the time.
And it's also too, and it was like, it seems so obvious like in manga, but like when you see it in the animation, the way they progress the story of like Shin just like reading people's minds. Of, like, what they're picturing, and, like, we're not hearing the backstory. Someone, like, labor out their backstory. Like, he's just catching it in someone's mind. And now we know. And then it's, like, a moment has only happened versus like
that's Spy Family-ish.
You know, like, so it's like, why would they be standing there for 10 minutes talking this out? He just caught it in a quick second and they jump into it. But,
yeah. I was going to say something. Shit. I don't know. Oh, I was going to say, like, we're starting to see some of, like, their relationship develop. Like, mm-hmm. Shin and Sakamoto. Oh, no, mm-hmm. That's what it is. One thing that feels like an important role in the show is his voice. Sakamoto's voice.
Yeah.
Was Liana happy with that? Because I have to imagine, like, as a book reader, and knowing that, like, assuming it's similar in the manga,
mm-hmm.
like, knowing that's going to be an important aspect of the character, was she like happy with like how they're doing it? Because they're making like a choice.
Yeah, I actually think she liked that. I think she expected, because there's going to be another character coming out soon, kind of like the Dandadan thing, like they're slowly introducing all the friggin' the misfits that he draws into the store.
Gotta get the cast.
So there's a character coming up of Heisuke. She pictured like a voice reversal of him and Shin.
Oh,
so. So, but I think like since we've watched, you know, six times total across the two episodes, I think she's like, she, you know, it kind of like it fits more now too. And I remember there was a point at first it sounded weird, but in that first episode when Shin goes back and he sits in the car and he's like on the phone and you can feel his inner dialogue kind of arguing with the mafia boss. I was like, oh, this, I think this fits perfect. I think this is a good fit. But
nice.
Yeah, no, it's we're tight. Over the moon.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I'm enjoying it a lot and I'm not going to miss an episode.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, do you know what, like, I mean, you're going to know. This is a stupid question. This is rhetorical. But you know what gets me so hype that I'm like pacing in my living room being like, fuck yeah, afterwards, is what Solo Leveling is currently doing to the weekend.
Dave, I was like,
this show's rad as fuck.
My blood pressure went up so high this last Saturday. I was like, this show rips.
Bro, so we have these moments, you and I, every now and again where we watch something really heady. Like, we just got done talking about Severance and White Lotus. And it's like, sometimes, though, I just want to see my guy roll heads.
I just want to be a caveman. I just want carnage and fluidity on screen.
Like, I want to see you cut people in half. I want to see you kill a human being and use your necromancy powers to raise his corpse to serve you for all eternity.
When I saw that, you know the meme of, like, are we the baddies? Have you ever seen that, like, from Peep Show of, like...
Are we the baddies? Not Peep,
yeah. Just got this, like, really crippling vibe of, like, ooh... Maybe this isn't good, you know, like maybe this is like a mistake on Sung Jin Woo's part, but and you know, like there's just like a lot of foreboding in that in episode 3 of like it's too,
we're going down the rabbit hole, Doc.
It's so good, dude.
I think we're the danger.
yeah.
Sung Jin Woo is the one who knocks.
Yeah, we are the calamity, but I love what they did in episode 3. It seems like so.
Episode 3, because it's confusing for both you and the viewer. Like,
yes,
anime and Crunchyroll, they do this stupid shit where they call it season 2 and then they put it out and they go, oh, like in my notes, episode 15, episode 14 and 15. Yeah. So like you're talking about episode 15, which is what happens.
It's kind of like he does the whole, hey, like I'm going camping for a week, and he just goes and gets lost. But I love what they did of, like, we had everything that took place in season 1. We kind of, we have an idea of where he gets with his power level and all that.
Yep.
We kind of, you know, we see where he is. But, like, we don't really know what that stacks up against everything else. Like, we kind of, season 1 ended with, like, him getting the necromancy powers, essentially.
Yep. And Shadow Monarch.
And to have, like, they did it, just the way they displayed of, like, him ripping through the tower of like getting 75 floors done.
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, he's like, I probably can easily can do this. Like when
but
I come
he's
back.
Out of supplies. That's the only but reason he's stopping yet.
It just, I love the way they like play with the expectation of like how long the journey is going to be and how long, like what his, and then like he gets another key and it's going to be like, it's so gamey and, but like it kind of fits in like a real world scenario still too. Like it's so funny. This is running in tandem with Shangri-La Frontier because, like, it is like full on game. Like, it's all like what happens in the game is the game. You shut it off, you go home, or you know, you go to bed or whatever. This is like there is repercussions in like every situation. You know, it's God, dude. It's power fantasy supreme, dude. Like, it's so cool.
You called it when we like last episode of the podcast. We're talking about the season premiere of season 2,
mm.
And you had mentioned, like, oh, I bet we're going to be here for like one more episode. You're talking about the Red Gate. And I was like, at first, before you said that, I was like, I don't think so, because I was like, you know, they put the cold environment in the OP. I was like, in my mind, I was like, you know, a lot of shows are going to make this into an arc, right? Like, it's going to be an elongated thing. And then, like, lo and behold, like, he just rips through that thing in one episode. And then the next episode is this whole 100 floor dungeon we're talking about, plus introducing his dad. Like,
How sick was that?
all that to say, the pace of the show is fucking wild. They get so much done, and every episode has Sakuga, and every episode has action and exposition. Like, I understand why people love it, because it shit is just moving, dude. It's just
And
moving.
it's coherent, it's clear, like
No one's
it's making
confused.
it, no one is confused. Like, again, like, I'm not saying it's not a heady show, but it's not a heady show, you know what I mean? Like, it's very much, it's wearing it, everything is on its chest, you know, like, it's all out there. But yeah, but like, they did, like, just the way they played with expectations, because they set up this, you know, the South Korean hunter who was in America, and he came back to kill Sung Jin-woo because, you know,
oh, yeah,
his brother was
Huang.
killed. Huang, yeah.
Yeah.
And
Jacked boy.
They've been like setting him up as like this, you know, this killing machine.
Yeah, that aura, right?
And then in a split second, like, he's floored out, the building is destroyed, and he's completely crumbled within the building because of, you know, Sung Jin-woo's dad. I'm like, now that is how you play with like fan expectation, you know, and, you know, getting everyone pumped up and, you know, where's this going to go? But oh yeah, it is literally, I think about it like the second it ends. I go to work on Monday, and I'm like, I cannot wait till Saturday night.
Yep.
Like, that is what I'm doing Saturday. Everyone's going to bed. I am watching Solo Leveling. I'm trying not to yell. I'm just hanging out downstairs. It's so good, dude.
The fight in episode 2 against the Ice Elves and the Ice Elf boss, but it starts with a B. I forget his name. I saw a lot of the fandom. They were calling him, you know, the Night King from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But dude, that whole episode was so good.
And also, yeah, like, the consciousness, like, the creatures can speak, and like, they know not to attack him, like, or they don't have the urge to kill him, I guess.
Yeah, let's talk a couple, very briefly, about a couple little theories here, because one thing that's interesting and felt notable in that episode was, one, Sung Jin-woo is able to converse with them and regular people can't, but, you know, that's probably because of the game, right? But he asks them a pointed question: is what? Who are you? What are you doing? And the Night King guy gets edited. Like, you saw that, right? Like,
it went back to his beginning of his script. Yeah,
yeah. So one, that's interesting. We've always known there's something larger at play, kind of moving the chess pieces across the board. But that felt like a tip of the cap. Like, remember, like, the system is clearly doing this shit on purpose, right? We're building towards something. And then, two, in that episode, Sung Jin-woo kills a human. And I think that was the third time. And also, he looked cold as fuck when he did it. Like, he looks so dope. But that was like,
he didn't even do it. He sent Igris after him. Yeah.
Which is sick.
Igris just whipping around. It's so cool. You got Tank now. You got the bear. We got
bro.
And just the dopey face of that, like, the shield guy now, too. The guy that he killed.
Did you notice? This is for the video game fans. Did you notice that? So the Iron was the tank guy.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And he has an aggro ability. Like, he sends out a red bubble, and then it would draw aggro from the boss. The boss's eyes would turn red, and he'd say, like, "You die first," and he'd switch targets to the tank. That's some video game shit.
I love it.
Just little details like that are so dope that they add. And then, okay, yeah, last thing is, like, the dad thing. So, like, I think we both know this, but we've left it unsaid.
Yeah.
Is it fair to assume that maybe the dad knows something about what Sung Jin-woo is going through? Like, he may not know that it's his son having these issues, but do you think, like, the dad's aware of, like, maybe there's something larger at play and Sung Jin-woo may end up being the problem?
I don't think he knows that Sung Jin-woo is going to be the problem, or most likely is the problem. I mean,
how could he, right?
I think he just heard Huang, like, kind of openly say, like, you know, like, your son's fucking dead.
Yeah.
You know, like, because, you know, I'm going to get him. So I think, you know, there's like a protectiveness there, obviously, but the exactly of like what's been going on in their lives, like, you know,
yeah.
And what is going on with him, I don't think he would have any idea.
I'm referring to what you said earlier, like the he warned of an incoming calamity. And he also said, because Huang said, do you know how many powerful hunters there are? And then Sung Jin-woo's dad said, they'll be used against us.
Mm.
As which in necromancy.
Made me think of Shadow, made me think of Shadow Monarch immediately.
So I wonder what's happening there. But it does feel like we're headed down like a protagonist is going to be the villain.
Eren Yeager situation.
Yeah, but like, you know, with Eren, it really hurt, right? In this moment, I don't give a fuck. I just want to watch Sung Jin-woo cut people in half.
Desperate. You know what else I thought was really funny? Because it was bothering me from season one. The dude that... The guy that wants to like take over the guild, his father's guild.
Yes.
And you know
sweet
him and
boy.
His
oh,
sweet
he's gonna
boy.
Die, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's the little brother. Now they got the.
Now, yeah, he's dead now. Yeah. But I was thinking like the whole plan of, they clear all these dungeons. It's enough for him to write the test, and I was like, how is no one gonna just call out that like someone like he just hired someone else to do it for him? Like it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really prove anything. And like it's the first thing that's brought up when he has
dad's
the meeting
like,
with his
clearly.
Dad. And it was one of those moments of like this show surprisingly like everyone is kind of smart, you know, like people are responding in a realistic way, like people, you know, two people come out of a gate, you know, when 10 people should have come out of a gate, like people are gonna be like, oh, like what happened in there, like they're not just kind of like, oh,
it's
whatever
not...
like
yeah you're right.
It the world weirdly feels like there is consequences and like people are like connecting the dots, like when it seems like the dots need to be connected. And just that scene with the guy and his dad but taking over the business and like just bringing up all the stuff up front, I was like, oh, like this is kind of clear and coherent, like this is how things would probably work. I don't know, I just thought it very astute.
No, that but, is like a really good observation, because you're right, like a lot of shows other than like the protagonist and the main cast, it's like a lot of the characters around them are NPCs, but like they don't have the ability to be like, what?
Huh?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
But you're right. It's not something I thought about, but it does make the whole world feel more like connected as a result. Like, you know, like when the Red Gate thing happened, like all these people are like, what the fuck's going on with this Sung Jin-woo guy?
Mm-hmm.
Like the reason people are suspicious of him is because he's suspicious as fuck. So it's like, it's good to see that like, you're right. Like, you know, he's not just walking among a crowd of lemmings, and it's just like his show.
It is interesting how drastic from the end of season one of him being kind of tiptoeing, not trying to let on too much, to now he's just like, you know, like there was that I think at the end of episode two where like the guy tries to stop him, the not Huang, but like one of the other guys from the White Tiger Guild.
Red hair.
And
that's right.
He puts his hand on him and like, you know, like, hey, I got questions for you. And like, and exactly, like Sung Jin-woo like kind of hits him and like, I don't know, maybe you should be saying thank you to me. Like for start. And there's just the bravado and like
the confidence.
The hubris, you know, kind of imanting off of him. And it's like, whoa, like this is going to get you in trouble. But I think that's what you're looking for now. I think he is looking for trouble. But also like he already has 2 out of 3. For the Elixir of Life. I was like, that's early in the season. You know?
Yeah, it makes you think, like every time I feel like the show has established a long-term goal of like, here's where we're heading, we get there quite quickly. Like maybe, I don't know about the Elixir, but like his progress is rapid. 75 floors in one episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now that he's like buffed up a little bit, it's like, okay, so next time he goes back, he's shutting that place down. Yeah, I don't know. It's
and him
again,
getting bored too towards the end. He was getting bored with the bosses of like, you know, he was monologuing on them like when they were like trying to do their piece, and then he dropped like the skeleton. Yeah, it's just such a fun show. Everyone should be watching this. This is like the show of the season by far.
Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
Anything else? What do you got?
I gotta talk to you about a movie I watched the other night that I have not been able to get out of my head. It's your boy, Sebastian Stan.
Fuck, we watch different Oscar movies, but I'm actually glad to hear this.
Okay,
you give this, and then I'll do an Oscar movie.
Okay, I watched A Different Man.
Okay, because he's my boy. He's up for two.
Yeah, he's up for two.
And he won a Globe for
A Different Man.
For A Different Man, and not The Apprentice.
Yes.
Okay, so tell me about A Different Man.
You know, like it's an A24 movie. Like it's, you know, it's about. He plays a person like with a disfigurement They don't really get into like exactly what it is, if it's just like a something at birth or if it was an accident or whatever. But like, you know, he had like his face is very, you know, not Sebastian Stan.
Yeah.
And, you know, like it's just, he's like an aspiring actor and like you can see like the insecurities that he has and like, but like, you know, it's so hard to explain. I don't really want to explain because I think you have to watch this movie. A, you're such a big Sebastian Stan fan. This movie just left, just like the way they play with like, you know, faces and like, you know, like, is it really the face or is it like who you are on the inside? And
right.
And it's just this story of like imposter syndrome and feel like, you know, like someone's robbing your life. There's another person in at one point in the movie who, Dave, I legitimately thought this was CG. This is an actual person with an actual facial disfigurement.
Yes, I knew that they...
I did not know. I thought the whole movie was like, wow, that's really impressive CG. And then yeah, I was like, oh, that's a real person.
They bring in an actor, a real person that yes. has a similar issue, right?
And, I really don't want to get into, like, into it because there's just... It kind of, like, spoils, like, the whole experience. But
okay.
I was blown away. It is not what I thought it was. I thought it was going to be like a full blown body horror, like down and depressing. It's a dark comedy. Like it's really funny. It's more like just like day to day life. Like there's a pretty significant part of the movie where it's like, oh yeah, like I'm watching The Substance again. And like, this is what I expected the whole movie to be. But like they took just a small portion of the movie, dialed it in like really extreme. You saw Nosferatu, dude. You're good. Like you're good to go. But I don't know. It just like I know this. Like you know, you should be talking about the movie or whatever. But like I've been thinking about it not since Saturday night. Like nonstop. It just completely gripped me. I'm gonna watch it again. I hope he's nominated for the Oscar for this.
Yeah.
I know there's a chance he might not get it. I think it's you know that just from kind of like the polling and all that, what people think. It's probably
Adrian Brody and.
Even to get nominated, Shadow, I think would be a big deal. But I know there's like that last fifth spot that's kind of between him, and Daniel Craig. I think is the
Daniel
consensus.
Craig for Queer, right?
Yeah. But I don't know, man. I was watching this. I was like, I could watch this again
really?
Like, immediately. Like, it's good, a movie man. That like I would like. I enjoyed it so much. I would love to have a copy of it. Like,
damn.
It just left an impression on me. It was it felt like it was nothing I'd ever watched before.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's bold.
It felt real, you know, like it didn't feel like the typical A24, like, oh, it's like, is it all a dream or is it all this? Like,
sure.
You know, like there's some level of like sci-fi to it. But, like, it's more just like a storytelling, like just trying to get from like point A to,
yeah.
It's just trying to get from the beginning of the story to the middle of the story. And then like, it kind of doesn't really appear again, but it's just like he's just such a good actor. I didn't know, I've seen him in things. I've liked him in things. I did not know he was this talented. Like acting behind like the prosthetics, and then like you see him like, you know, later, and you're just like, it feels like he's doing four performances in the movie, like because you can
he's
see
my
so many
guy, movies. Dude. That's what I'm telling you,
man. Like lifetime stock after this, true lifetime stock.
I posted for the first time to Reddit in like you know years. I'm one of these people, right? I lurk. I don't really comment or post. But I made my first comment like recently, probably within the last week, and I'm not gonna say on what subreddit, but you know what it was about. It's so I could get in a flame war with a bunch of people talking about the Anthony Mackie Captain America movie, and I was like, listen, you fucks, like you guys don't know what you're missing out on. Marvel Studio, fuck this one up.
Different man. I urge everyone to see it. It left a true impression on me.
Damn. All right. Yeah. Different man. Okay.
I think you'll love it. Great soundtrack.
Yeah, did I send you the link to that Hollywood Reporter roundtable with him?
Probably.
I love those
maybe
videos.
Maybe not, actually.
I love the director ones the most.
Mm.
The actor ones, because actors in general are a little fucking, you know.
Yeah.
They're a little precious, right?
Sure.
But there are often one or two people per episode that you're like, I'd really be interested to hear Denis Villeneuve talk about how he, you know what I mean, how he solved these problems. So it's like... But it was cool because it was the most of the big hitters from this season lead actors. So it was like Kieran Culkin and Adrian Brody and Daniel Craig and, you know, the whole...
Yep.
And Sebastian was there for two fucking movies. And the whole table is just asking him, so how did you do that? And it was cool to see Daniel Craig And those guys, and Adrian Brody nerding out about Sebastian's performances in these two movies.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really, I was like, yeah, dude, fucking put some respect on my guy's name.
I was blown away. I remember I finished the movie and I immediately thought back to, I remember you told me about that movie Fresh a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to watch
Fresh. Have you seen
now.
It?
No, I haven't. But like now it's on my list. Like yeah. I need to get more Sebastian Stan.
You got to watch it. It's I think you'll understand when I say it's a really fun movie for a dark.
Yeah.
It's fun. Like I didn't know he had that in him. I didn't know what the movie was. We just hit play. We went in blind. Zero Dark Grant, which I recommend you do for that movie too. So fun.
I went blind for this one. Like I knew the name. I knew like kind of the conceit of it. But like I said, I thought this was gonna be like I thought I was gonna be watching Another Substance. Genuinely, I was like, oh, like I'm in for like a really really fucked
is
up
it
ride.
You said it's kind of a dark comedy. So like I'm just wondering, like, is it ultra heavy? Like, is it gonna like hurt my heart?
No.
Nice.
Little bit. Like I definitely felt like
you wanna feel something.
I felt a sadness for the character. Truly. Sure. But by the ending, I was just like, it felt very
cool,
complete by the end, yeah.
I have two Oscar-related movies. Well,
hit me.
Have the noms officially come out? They probably have by now, or did they
push it? No, it got pushed through this Thursday, so the 23rd.
Okay, so, but I can do both pretty quickly, because I feel strongly about both, but I'm confident I can give you quickie reviews.
Mm.
First, in the order I watched them in, I saw Emilia Perez. Have you seen this?
No, I've been hearing a lot about it, though.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. I'm glad to have seen another musical because I don't see a lot. And when I watch them, I'm often like, this is pretty good. You know, like you can really appreciate it, right? I haven't seen Wicked yet. I will be watching it. But I thought that Emilia Perez is Zoe Saldana's movie.
Okay.
And it's wild that she's in the supporting category or that they're pushing her for that because she's
I didn't think she was the lead.
She's in 80% of the shots of the film.
Oh, wow.
Her character, though, feels like a passenger in it. Like,
okay.
In that it's not really her story, but she's kind of like the medium because she's like the central character. I think the net of this is that, like, it's a fun musical with cool choreography, as like most musicals tend to be.
Mm-hmm.
Selena Gomez's parts are pretty good, like as far as the singing and dancing stuff goes. Her character, until 20 minutes left, is completely disposable to the story. Like, just doesn't matter whatsoever. The first 80% of this movie, I'm like, did they just get her in this so they could say they had Selena Gomez?
Mm.
And then it felt like they tried to justify it at the end, and it just didn't work for me. I don't know. We watched that movie and we looked at each other afterwards and we were like, yeah, I don't know what all the hype is about. Like, I don't quite get it. I don't know, man.
It's a Netflix one, eh?
Yeah, and it just felt a little thin. So it's Zoe's movie. Like it's cool to see her have that range. I was saying to Sam, I was like, this lady is in every major franchise there is.
I love Zoe.
And I don't know if she's gunning for an Oscar nom with this one, but like I wouldn't be surprised because she does really good work in it.
From what I've heard, she's like very much on the campaign. So
yeah, I mean, she has a great performance in it, but
honestly,
the story is thin.
Everything you've said so far, I've heard like five different times on five different movie podcasts. Like, it's across the board. Like, people, like, there's things that people like, Zoe Saldana being the big one, but thin is like the word, like the most used word I've heard. Like, just like there's not a ton there, and a lot of people don't like the music either. So
The music is different, but I didn't mind it. I think that being up against Wicked is tough. Like, that's just like bad timing and rough. Okay, so yeah, and for the love of God, it's too long. Everything is too long these days.
How long?
Everything is over two. It's 2:15, 2:20. Way too long. 30. You could cut 30 minutes of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's way too long.
A Different Man, hour 45, in and out. It was great.
This is my next movie. I watched A Real Pain, 90 minutes.
I did too.
Let's go, dude.
Yeah.
Let's go.
You like it?
I fucking loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
Again, like, I'm not saying anything, super unique here, but it just felt like I was watching, Romulus Roy, you know, like Roman Roy, like, the whole movie, which
we gotta talk about that.
Like, I get, but, like, it feels kind of unfair that he's probably going to win the Oscar for...
You think
like,
he wins?
Everyone across the board thinks it's him.
Jeez.
Yeah. I don't know. I just... It feels weird that, like, he's doing his shtick. It feels like he's redoing something that he did before. Okay. And now, like, movie audiences are kind of going to give him an award for it. It feels a little weird to me, but...
Okay, so... I hadn't thought of it that way. That's a really interesting point. So, okay. So, hear me out. So...
Yeah.
I watched that movie and I was so glad that Jesse Eisenberg directed it. Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome. And he wrote it. That's awesome. And, like the Jewish part, like the Jewish part, the Jewish themes of the film and the locations they got to film on, which you are normally not allowed to film on.
Mm.
And the use of silence throughout that sequence, and like
when music just cuts as they start going on the tour,
really powerful storytelling. Like that guy has a future as a director, like in the movie or not as an actor. Like I was like really impressed by his ability to direct. I thought like it's like a nice looking movie. It's so bright.
Every time they want to do like scenery shots, I was like, this is true, like it was so beautiful. I was like,
really,
I want to be in that world, like right now. Like I want to hop into that painting.
Really intimate storytelling. Yeah. I'll get to the Kieran part, and I think it's that. I intentionally didn't look this up, but I will now that I've seen the movie. I'm curious about like Jesse Eisenberg's like inspiration for the role for the Kieran Culkin character, because on the surface, if you like, other than the exploring our roots and our Jewish heritage part of the film, which is substantial, the rest of the movie feels like dealing with a family member with mental illness, right?
Yeah.
And it was like, man, a lot of this is fucking, I get that, like, and there, I think there's two elements to this, and you're completely right about one of them. One of them is like Kieran Culkin does such a good job playing that person.
Mm-hmm.
And then simultaneously, you're like, is he playing that person at all? Is that just him? And is he kind of just recycling the character a little bit? Because you're right. Like, we have probably... like I mean, we just saw 4 seasons of that. Right?
Did you to answer, you know, like, you looking... wanted to dive in a little more. Did you listen to Jesse's interview with Maron?
No, I didn't even know he did that.
That will literally... explain this whole movie.
Wow, what a pairing they are. Is it a good interview?
It's incredible. Yeah,
that's like,
he without like
spoiling too, like, so good,
the best. Like, again, the Sebastian Stan interview he did was incredible. Like the Jesse Eisenberg one, it like just really kind of like,
fuck, no one can just did that.
No one can just casually like, hey, like, so like, why'd you say that? You know, how why did you write it that way? You know, like, it's just, it feels very like old man. Like, I'm just gonna like stumble my way into this.
Yeah, but it works because Merrick is so publicly and fundamentally broken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And like, he's also incredibly thoughtful.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah. I didn't want to like, you're right. I don't want to like detract from like how good he is at the job, but like, it's just like you have someone across the table who isn't pretending they have their shit together. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like so open about all this stuff and like,
fuck, to get,
he's a good interviewer.
To give the Kieran Culkin role and character a little more credence, and I'm not trying to completely undercut it saying he's just doing Roman Roy again, but like after listening to the interview, one of the big points of saying like both of those people are me, Jesse Eisenberg, like both characters are him. And he kind of like, he, it's him split. And after you listen to the interview, like, it's just like, oh, like, it's a good pairing. Like, you know, I know it seems obvious, like, you know, interview
with director ourselves, and all that. Though that's what writers say, right? You write what you know. Yeah.
But yeah. I feel like having listened to that interview and that, you know, when it came out like however many weeks ago, and then finally getting a chance to watch it this weekend, I was like, oh, like, I see that. Like, I see the pain you had, dude. Yeah, I can feel it. But it's, I did really enjoy it. That table scene, like the
dinner.
The dinner scene, yeah. And, you know,
Eisenberg's monologue?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Outstanding.
And, like, how many times have you been, like, you know, like, there's, like, just, like, you know, inebriated conversations with, like, someone you love and you're close to, and it's just, like, you know, like, they think they can say whatever they want because you're close to your family and all that, and they think, like, oh, it'll be okay because we're close, and it's, like, but that hurt, you know? Like, just, I think they really nailed, like, the closeness of, like, friends and family and, you know, how, you know, both can be hurt by each other at the same time. I don't know. I just, I, It's a very, very thoughtful movie.
That's a really good observation by you, because I think these conversations that happen throughout the film between Eisenberg and Culkin, that it's exactly what you're describing. It's this intimate but not intimate, not intimacy of like, these people can really hurt each other with the weight of their words. But so often, I think that dialogue is the hardest to write. Like, how are you, how are you supposed to write dialogue between people that actually know and care about each other? They kind of have a shorthand, but like make it seem real and grounded, and like not have them monologuing in a way like a Tarantino, you know what I mean? Where it just feels like, okay, people don't talk like that, you know what I mean? It's
You talk like that, but no one else does.
But it's so it's like, how do you get the characters to feel human? And like that show, like we're talking about White Lotus earlier, like everything feels very grounded. Like,
oh yeah, the tour guide was what's it, the
how's I know it,
it yeah was I was just Ethan. Thought of that
And we
that
looked
was
it
brutal
up.
Too. That was so brutal too. When he's just getting cut down in the butt in the forest about his tour, and he's just trying to please, and he's trying to, you know, see it from, you know, their perspective and just how hurt he is. I was like, wow, this poor guy.
And just about the tour guide slash Ethan from White Lotus season two, we looked it up later. That guy is. That was his British accent. I didn't even know he had a British accent. So his character in White Lotus, he's doing this amazing American accent that was so confusing the whole time. Or not confusing.
Well, the other couple too. Theo James is British, and he plays an American.
Who's
James? The other couple?
Cam? The other couple?
Yeah.
Because he's very, the gentleman, right?
Yeah, he's like super posh.
Is he really?
I loved his accent in The Gentleman. It was very like...
Wow.
Yes, well, you know, I can't even... I'm not even pretending to do it,
but he was astounding in that movie, or in that show. He was so good. And I, you know, we don't like, generally speaking, cover like pop culture stuff, but I will say we were in the last two episodes when we found out about Aubrey Plaza's husband passing away. Yeah. And she just put in, for me, who as a person who has not seen her entire works, but like that was the best thing I've ever seen her in. And I was like, I can't believe
She was exceptional in that,
And yeah, that really blows. Man, okay, so yeah, we covered some good stuff.
What's your next Oscar movie that you're planning on watching? Maybe we can kind of plan it for the next pod. Because the noms will be out, so we'll know. You know,
yeah, okay, maybe we talk about that offline, because I'm not sure. Sam is obviously not going to let me escape without watching Wicked. So have not seen that?
I've seen it. I went to the theater. Yeah.
Okay, so
I enjoyed it.
I want to see. Yeah, I don't want to sound like, oh, I have to watch Wicked, dude. If there is one exception, and you've kind of seen it for us, I don't know anything about Bob Dylan, and I can't handle any more fucking biopics.
I liked it. It's
no, but but you had a whole family connection to it.
Yeah. I think
I can't name you one song, Grant. I don't know what he looks like. I don't know anything about Bob Dylan.
I think you would like some Bob Dylan, but that's neither here nor there.
No, I bet I would, but it's just like this movie. I'm just not in a rush to see it.
No, and he's probably going to win too.
Yeah, he seems like the one lock I've heard about. I am.
He's putting the work in, dude. He's putting the work in.
Double header on SNL coming up.
Wild.
He's going to host and be the musical act.
That's this weekend, eh?
Yeah, it's coming weekend. Yeah.
Okay. I'll check that out.
Do you have anything on your priority list for the next Oscar film? Because we need a brutal list.
I had brutal list,
Wicked. Anything else big?
Sing Sing is one that I wanted to see.
I'm interested maybe in Conclave.
Oh, Anora. Anora and Conclave.
Oh, we got to see Anora. Yeah.
Sing Sing. Yeah, I think that was
okay, the only other one. We'll sync up offline and try to target the same ones. We're trying to watch one per weekend. So by next pod, we should have two more done. All right.
Definitely. I'm in a movie mode. We were talking about this the other day. I'm really digging movies right now.
Yeah, me too.
A little bit of anime, watch a movie on the weekend.
Cool. Yeah. Anything else?
No, I'm good.
Me too. We went the whole pod without plugging the socials. For you Americans, if you still have access to TikTok, you can find us on Part Time Otaku Podcast on the talk. If not, Instagram Reels will have to do. Same thing. It's Part Time Otaku Podcast. We're on YouTube. Subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, which has video. We put the video out on YouTube as well. Apple Music, you can find the audio version because I haven't set that up yet. I think that's it. We do this bi-weekly. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Grant, go ahead and say the thing.
Bye, guys.